Hey, Oliver, I don't even know this about you. I know a lot of things about you, things I don't really feel comfortable knowing about you, but I don't know if you have a man cave.
No, I'm in the process of building one out in my garage, actually.
Well, do I have the absolute perfect place for you to, in essence, online shop to fill your man cave? You want to hear about it?
Yes, yes. No, I need to fill my man cave. So how do I do this?
Yeah, to fill your man cave, you go to Man Cave Basics Plus. They have 1,000 images of patents on the site. If you have something in mind that they don't have, they will try to find it. It's a way to put things in this special place for you to make you feel like you're at home, like a Harley Davidson frame from 1928, a Monopoly board from 1935. Cool items that you can have that give your space a rustic look. Does that make sense to you?
No, I love this. I love this. So basically, they specialize in helping you find the perfect gift for those that are hard to buy for. You know,
that's another way of looking at it. Yes, if you're not, selfish and narcissistic like me, where I'm just thinking about myself, this is a perfect place to go find something for that one friend that you have that you can never come up with something cool that always outdoes you when it's time to give presents.
Mm. Cool, I'm in.
And here's the paragraph that gets me because I think of you. The greatest thing about the images is that they're based on people's passions. Fly fishing, surfing, medical, sports. That's all you, except for medical.
Yeah, medical. Yeah, when you think of Oliver Hudson, you think medical.
That's the one thing I don't think of. I think medicinal, but yes. I don't think medical.
Well, then let's get an etched weed leaf somewhere.
All right, so let mancavebasicsplus.com help you this season of gift giving, and be sure to use the discount code DADDYISSUES20 for an extra 20% off.
Cavalry Audio. Did you guys see those numbers? 227,000 downloads in the past 30 days. I sent that. I know it's annoying, but I'm super pumped about it.
Got to keep it going. We still haven't seen one fucking dime. Not one. Not one dime. Literally, not even, not one, not, forget a dime. Not one penny.
Not even one red cent.
No, I saw that.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. I just didn't tell you about that.
So who's sending you red cents?
Red Arbacher?
Arbach.
I don't know. I fucked that one up.
As opposed to Orville Redenbacher?
I miss Orville.
He is in the great popcorn popper in the sky.
He is. He's popping all around heaven.
He's hanging with Bartles and James and Wilford Brimley.
Yeah. You think Bartles and James are in heaven?
I think the way they live their lives, carefree and buzzed on like bad
wine coolers.
Yeah, wine coolers that were such a hit at every college party. I don't see how they could have ever done anything that would send them to hell.
Oh yeah. Well,
but
we
don't believe
know.
In heaven and hell. So
no, I don't. Neither do you.
Yes, I do. I believe in there's got to be more. I'm not doing this. I'm not getting into this again. I know,
but Joe, you don't believe in a heaven up here and a hell down here. Come on.
Okay. However it's defined, it's irrelevant. I don't believe that when you take your last breath, you just evaporate and go into the, just sink ether. Into the ground.
Yeah, okay. But do you believe all of a sudden Joe is like, ah, damn it, like, and you're in hell, and you're like, what the fuck?
I don't think I'm going to hell.
Well, you're not the judge.
I think it's all way too much for us to understand. We've talked about this 1,000 times.
No,
People are clicking off our podcast as we go down this path.
No, they're not. We've got new listeners.
Fast-forwarding it like 15 seconds at a clip.
No.
Yeah.
We've got new listeners, Joe. Margo keeps sending us updates every 38 seconds, so I know.
I mean, I can print something like that out and send it to you. I can make us feel real good. I can say that we have 2 million listeners per podcast. I'm gonna take a screenshot of it and send it to you.
You know my favorite thing that Margo did? She sent us one and it was growing. It's like we have 227,000 downloads, right? And like, oh, cool. And then the next one she sent with like a big like celebration face or whatever emoji was 2,000 less than the previous. It said 225,000. It was very concerning.
I know. I realized that. I just get excited when I see the numbers, and I saw.
Yeah, but there was a dip. You sent us the dip with a really excited emoji.
So we should be excited for the dip.
Yes.
Hey, we lost 2,000 listeners. Confetti.
Hey. Josh, do you believe in a heaven and a hell? Do you believe there's a heaven and a hell?
Oh my God.
Sweet God.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
Yes, you do. Josh, do you believe in heaven and hell?
I don't think so. Not really, no.
Okay, thank you.
I'm just with a bunch of godless heathens on this podcast. No wonder we don't all hang out.
Well, Margo believes in
heaven and hell?
For sure.
No way.
No, I don't believe in heaven or hell. I don't believe in anything. I think we've talked about this. I think when you're done, you're done. This is it.
That's why you're so sad. That's why you're sad. I know what you're going to say, Oliver. I can write it down and put it in an envelope, and I can mail it to you, and you can open it in Albuquerque or wherever you are, and it's going to say, you know what Margo believes in? Tongue rings.
No, I was going to say, Margo believes in 1-900 numbers with her sexy, sultry voice.
That's right. I'm losing my voice, and I have this microphone, and I'm losing my voice. So now I have a side business. I'm going to start a 900 number. It's great. Thank you.
Hey, Joe, did you ever call those 900 numbers?
I did. I called.
Like back in the day?
Back in the day, because I was beyond curious as to what was happening on these things.
Yes, yes.
But it was all bullshit. It was all recorded. At least the one I called was like a recorded. I didn't talk to a live human being.
I did.
Of course you did.
Well, my friend John and I, when we were young, we were in high school, or maybe even less, or maybe, I don't know. I don't know how old we were. But we stole his dad's credit card and would call these like 1-900 numbers. And you talked to a person? Oh, there was a person, but it was a party line. So it was like five dudes on there like, yeah, baby, like, you know, being all disgusting. And John would try to do a deep voice like, hey, like, my name's Paul. And we'd just be listening. Oh, God, I don't know. Probably 14 or something. We used to get these paper called the like LA Express, XPRES. And it was like all the 900 numbers back in the day. And, you know, we were just bad. We were just little deviant weirdos back then.
Maybe that was one of the fringe benefits of growing up in St. Louis. There was no, at least as far as I'm aware, like a St. Louis Express publication that I could go, you know, browse the different 900 numbers. I did. I got caught one time. I went on there, I would say twice, and it's the old joke that my dad used to tell, and I'm going to leave this up to Josh as to whether it stays in or not, because his ears are way more sensitive and aware of what's palatable to the general population, much more so than I am. But his old joke was, it's like they say, if you ever get lost in the forest, start playing with yourself, and someone will find you. So I probably told that on here before, but
no, you haven't. I love that.
Yeah.
No, I love that.
The moral of it is, you know, the minute you start doing something wrong, somebody's going to fucking find out about it. It may not be right now, but I think I called a 900 number and my first wife walked in on me on the phone checking this thing out. Maybe I called it, but it was recorded, so yes, I called it more than once, but I don't think I called it more than twice. And it was completely unsatisfying, and she used to do the bills. And it was just like, what is this? What is this number. Oh, yeah. And then she walked in and I was like, And but it was recorded people. It was not satisfying in the least. It was just so they play on the idiots that call these things like, "Hey there, big boy." Like,
oh yeah, okay, yeah,
great,
yeah.
Awesome.
No, of course. I mean, we talked to a live person, but it was all entertainment.
It was a bunch of men.
It was pure entertainment. Just listening. Honestly, my friend John and I, we just found it humorous that these other dudes were on there being so disgusting and saying the weirdest things. And we were young. We didn't understand some of the terminology they were using. And I'll leave this up to Josh whether to keep this in because he has very sensitive ears. But I remember distinctly one guy goes, "Oh, yeah, baby, I'm going to lick your twat." And we didn't know what that meant.
I'm still not sure what that is.
I don't think I've ever used that word in my life.
I know. Except you're just a dumb twat. Like, what is that? What does that even mean? I don't know you stupid belly button.
Yeah. I don't even know. And John and I were laughing so hard. We're like, what is that? We had no idea what it was. It was educational. We'll let Josh surprise us. See whether these things
get at some point in this podcast recording.
Yeah,
I'm just gonna yell something out to scare the shit out of that bird behind Josh.
He's got his headphones on though, doesn't he?
I have the speakers on when I'm not talking, so she can hear. But
okay. How do you know it's a she?
Hold on. Tested.
Josh has something.
I'm confused about the line, the hotline that you're talking about. How did you hear these other guys on it? Was it like a big party line?
Yeah, it was a party line. I mean, you got to remember, I'm 45. I don't know how old you are, but this was 30 plus years ago. And you know, you put a credit card in, and it's a certain amount a minute, and then all of a sudden you're connected, and it's a bunch of guys being like, "Yeah, baby," and she's like, "You like that, baby?" And another guy's like, "Yeah," and there's like 1,000 dudes. It's like a audio orgy.
That's insane. And
yeah, it was weird.
Such simpler times.
For real.
And now you're putting like parental locks on your computer so that Bodie and Wilder aren't seeing like.
Oh, yeah. We had to go through a lot to actually experience pornography back in the day, you know, to get a little bit more serious, you know what I mean? Like, nowadays, it's at the fingertips for these kids, and I have to put the locks on or at least say to my boys, like, look, you're going to see it. I can't prevent you from seeing porn. You just have to understand that this is all bullshit. It's like watching an action movie. Those explosions, you know, everyone's safe. No one really gets blown up. Same thing. They're acting. They're performing. It's adult entertainment. But right. Back in the day, dude, you remember? I mean, we had to steal a credit card, get the 900 number, put it in, put on a deep voice. You know, I mean, the steps involved to
I can think of three ways as a kid in the 80s that I could come across it like a bare boob.
Mm-hmm.
One. Channel 9 in St. Louis was like public television, and they every once in a while they would run the British performance of Caligula, which had like a breast or two in there. So that was like, oh my god, it's like on Channel 9 late at night. Mm-hmm. Now I just came across it. I don't even. It wasn't like I was
looked
even
in
aware.
TV guide,
yeah, but you'd have to look in the TV guide to find that.
Yeah,
out.
Yeah.
Two, you could pay people to go in instead of like paying people to buy beer for us as a group of kids. You could pay somebody of age, I guess 18. I don't know what the age is, to go in and buy like Hustler magazine,
yes.
Or Cherry magazine, or Wee magazine. Remember those things?
Of course, dude.
Dog
Club.
Shit. Yeah. Club magazine. And then three, you could go on the TV and there were scrambled channels.
Yeah.
But you had to like, you know, put your head next to the TV and tinfoil out of your ear. And then every once in a while, you it would kind of freeze on a picture of like Shannon Tweed on Cinemax.
Shannon Tweed.
The future Mrs. Gene Simmons.
Yeah.
But there'd be like a freeze frame. It's like, oh my God, I think I saw something.
Yeah,
and that's some,
like,
about
distorted,
it.
Distorted boob would go like, whoa,
all
like
pixelated,
melt into,
and then it was gone.
Right.
Now you can type like three letters into a computer. Your kid can anywhere.
Yeah.
That frightens the hell out of me. I don't know why with my girls, I don't feel like that was ever something that I would worry about. But with these boys now and what's going to be around in the next 10 years when they're caring about that kind of stuff,
I mean, your boys will probably virtually lose their virginity before they actually do.
Right. It's way safer. When we're going through COVID 30.
Totally.
And it'll be
they're
going
to have a whole setup where, you know, it has just accepted and you're going to have to meet the virtual girl and play along with it. And,
right. You know,
it's going to be a whole thing.
Hello, Mr. Buck. I would like to date your son, Wyatt, for the evening.
You're like, oh, Jesus. Oh, so Shannon Tweed played my mother in my first television show that I ever did called My Guide to Becoming a Rock Star. And she played my mom.
She played Goldie Hawn.
No, she played my mom in the show. What? No,
I'm just kidding. Starring Shannon Tweed in the role of a lifetime as Goldie Hawn in How to Become a Rock Star.
And then my rap gift from her was a signed Playboy of her on the cover.
How old were you?
24.
Oh, okay. So it was age appropriate.
Yeah. Yeah. I started acting at 21. You know, I didn't start young.
Yeah.
Well, my dad was Michael DeBars. Remember him?
No.
No? Okay, forget it. Josh, cut that out.
What was he in?
I'm kidding. He was like a rocker. Back in the day.
I think we should, after everything we talk about, go, Josh, cut that out. Cut that out or I'm never doing this again.
Fuck.
Ready?
On another note, dude,
I just wanted to see if that would scare his bird.
It did a little bit. Look, she's a little freaked out. Look at her.
Oh, yeah.
Is that the most movement that bird's had in the last, like, month?
She doesn't. She's a bit of a perch potato, as they call them.
Oh, is that what you guys get on your chat rooms? There, look, she's coming over to check me out.
Yeah. Whoa.
Ca-ca!
Do you actually go on chat rooms and stuff, like parrot chat rooms?
No, but I am in several groups on Facebook and Reddit.
It's a bunch of guys sitting around going,
It's a parrot party line.
What do you talk about?
Just I don't know. People ask advice. They share things that happen with their like funny videos and stuff. It's great.
Like, are you not scared of that thing? Is it? There's no part of you that thinks that it could at any point jump on your back and start digging at your neck.
No. She is a lovely bird. She wouldn't. Really?
We should create a horror movie like Cujo, but with a parrot that just like loses it.
I'd be more scared of the parrot. They can fly. First of all, that's a problem. Can parrots fly? Parrots can fly.
Yeah. Of course, she can fly. She can fly. She just can't land. That's the problem.
Oh,
what the fuck is wrong with her?
She was a little stunted in her growth.
I would think that would be innate, like how to land. There shouldn't need to be instructions on that.
That's what I thought.
All right, Josh, cut all that parrot stuff out.
All right.
Why? So, I think it's fascinating. Hey, guys, I have a question. My Polly doesn't want a cracker. What should I ask my parrot then?
Yeah, Josh is like, well, it's lost cause. Polly doesn't want a cracker. You've got to put him down.
Have you ever put a parrot down?
No, I hope. I mean, that would be awful.
And are they hard to flush? Are they hard to flush down a toilet?
Oh my God.
You can't flush that one down a toilet. You'll put it in like a box, like a shoe box, and probably bury it, right?
I don't know yet. Some people get them cremated and have their remains in a, you know, like in a jar or something.
A jar? Try a thimble, like a thimble. I mean, the remains of a bird. It's like ant.
It could be a very small jar.
Not a jar.
Like a, what do they call those when you put the, their
mason jar?
Shot glass.
An urn.
There you go. A shot glass. An urn. Yeah, thank you. That's what I was looking for. Like a little tiny urn.
You know what you should do is just wear its ashes around your neck.
Some people do that. That is a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those people should be investigated. Hey, what a cool new necklace. Thanks. It's Polly.
Polly ate too many crackers. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back after this short break with more Daddy Issues. So I got I got sick. I've been sick for the last like 3 days, 4 days, COVID? Which I haven't experienced in forever. No, because I get tested every single day and I hadn't come to my house and I actually had to miss a day of work.
Where are you right now?
I'm in Albuquerque. I was supposed to go home and see the kids and I had to stay here through the weekend just to try to get better. I got to go to work at 4 today.
Oh. How long are you in on this? I mean, it feels like they shot The Revenant in less time than you're shooting this show.
I'm almost done. I got 2 weeks.
2 weeks and you're done?
Yep, that's it.
And actually, do they have the ability to call you back and say, hey, we need this one scene?
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, there's contractual stuff. I mean, there's a certain amount of time, you know? I mean, I've got other plans that are hard to break or I can't break, then they'd have to work around it somehow.
Yeah, they call that a workaround.
Yeah, we'll do a workaround.
We'll do a workaround.
But that won't happen.
When you were in The Revenant, was that, did that bear suit get hot at any point?
Yeah. Yeah, it did. It did. I should have been nominated for that. That was a great movie. I should watch that movie again, actually. I only saw it one time.
The music is so perfect and haunting.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
It's so like melancholy and
yeah.
Everything is just so vast.
You know what I've been just, because I've been in sick mode, so I've been in fucking TV binge insanity. Like, I think I'm losing my mind. This is how much I've been watching TV, but I watched Yellowstone. Have you seen Yellowstone?
Yes, I'm up to episode 3, season 3.
Okay, you're around where I am.
I was when I first started it. I was prodded by my wife and my girls and my sister to continue on. I got into it hot and heavy in the second season, and now I'm having a really tough time getting back into season 3.
Really? Yeah, season 2 is good, really good. Season 3, it's slower.
Yeah.
A little slower. But I'm in, dude. I just...
Hey, son. Hey, grandson. Hey.
I love how he says, grandson.
Yeah. That's not the way it goes out here, grandson.
I just want to, like, live that life.
Oh, that's you. You fancy yourself Casey.
Yeah, I wish I was Casey. He's way more like badass than I am.
And my wife's in love with your real wife's real ex-boyfriend.
Well, it wasn't an ex-boyfriend. They had like a moment on a beach where his like hand wandered into like her nether region.
Oh, you didn't have to go there. Nor did he, but you didn't have to... You're talking about the great Rip. I'm like, babe,
he's great. He's fucking
he's
great.
He's great. Cole. He's unbelievable. Cole, yeah. Cole Hauser.
Yeah, he's really
and
good.
And then
yeah.
We were watching School Ties the other night, which my wife had never seen, starring Brendan Fraser.
Yeah.
And he's in it when they cheat on the test.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, hey, Michelle, who do you think that is? And he's like the little shit disturber in the class.
Yeah.
In the French class or history class, I think. And she's like, I don't know. I said, It's your boy Rip.
He's
like, no, it's not. I said, yeah, it is.
Yeah, he's no, changed it's not. A lot.
Well, he's a redhead. I said, yeah. That's called, hey, I dye my beard. I dye my hair. That shit is dyed and dyed beyond dyed.
Oh, yeah. For sure. Big time.
We should get Cole Hauser on here. I've been around Cole a little bit at a member guest. Would that be too tough for you?
Yeah. He's boys with McConaughey. He was at the member guest when I was there with you.
Yeah, but we were not partners then. You were with Travis that year.
That was the first year?
Yeah, that's when I really got to know you, and I had guest envy. I had Travis guest envy because we spent a lot of time together, and I was like, I wish Oliver was my guest.
Right.
But you were Travis Chamberlain's guest, and I was like, I was with my friend Harry, who I can play with any. I could go play with him right now, and that wasn't that exciting. So I came in kind of ready for this today. Most of the time, I don't know what we're going to talk about most of the time.
Yeah, that's the beauty of us.
Right.
That's why we're so special.
So I talked to my therapist today.
Oh.
Which made me very introspective. And I got a video sent to me last Sunday by my sister. And somebody sent her the video that had shot footage of our family as they were our guests. So these people lived next door to us when I was 13, and my sister would have been 10, and they came down to spring training. They rolled a video camera on the entire day, and I haven't seen or thought of my life as a 13-year-old since I was 13. So it was from beginning of day to end of day, and it was how every day of my life was spent.
Right.
Get up in the morning, go to Al Lang Stadium, watch a spring training baseball game, trail around after my dad, watch my dad interview people. I started noticing different idiosyncrasies and mannerisms that he had, stuff that I was aware of but not aware of. Watching him do the game, watching him, this is all on the video. But the interesting part happens at the end, because at the end, the video then goes inside our rented condo in St. Petersburg. And now I am transported to the 13-year-old Joe, the 10-year-old Julie Buck. And my dad is 59 then. I'm 52 now. My mom is 40-something. She looks amazing. She's diving around trying to not get videoed because she doesn't think she looks good, but she looks great. And then my dad puts on this like show for the kid holding the video camera. And it was like I was brought back to my 13-year-old self. And it was interesting in that the reason why I bring any of this up is I have a lot of the same issues that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And I never thought I did. I always thought, I look back on my childhood in a way that makes it feel like it was idyllic.
Mm-hmm.
And there, it really was not that ideal. It was great on many levels.
Mm-hmm.
But my dad was an older dad. My dad was a divorced guy who met my mom and was not divorced at the time. My mom gets pregnant with me. I come into the world. This is all in my book, so I'm not revealing anything there. But though every day was built on making my dad the most comfortable he could be. And at one point, he starts joking to the camera like, the woman who's down there says, well, Jack, you know, how do you start your day? He goes, well, I wake up, I jog 5 miles, I come back, I lay Carol's clothes out, I lay out her makeup, I cook breakfast for the kids, I lay the kids' clothes out, I make sure they're up and ready to go and take them to school every day. And I'm thinking, shit, but he's making it a joke. I'm like, that is exactly how I live. I don't really get up and run 5 miles. But this was so far away from his like reality where it was like, it was like my dad got up when he got up. He read the paper front to back. He smoked his cigarettes and drank his coffee, took a nap, got dressed, went down to the ballpark at 2 o'clock for a 7 o'clock game, came back. The house was dead quiet. He couldn't make noise. It was just seeing my dad as a contemporary at that age almost, it was mind-blowing. And it makes me realize, you know, that while I get compared to my dad, who was in many ways as close to anybody as anybody has ever been with me, there was a lot there that was like, I don't know. It wasn't how I... It was very revealing.
Let's put it that way. Did you talk to your therapist after you saw this video, obviously?
I sent her the video.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And she watched the back end of it. And I did it because I wanted to make sure that I was seeing it correctly. And I showed it to Michelle. And she's like, you know what that video proves to me? You are exactly like your dad, and you are nothing like your dad. Right. You're exactly like your dad in what you do. You're nothing like your dad in that your day starts making sure the kids are okay. And his day started with making sure he was okay. And then my mom kind of handled everything else.
You're everything that he was being sarcastic about.
Like almost to a T.
You're actually that person.
Right. And you're the same way because... And so that's why I bring any of this up, and I'm sorry that I rambled, but when I was thinking of you as I was talking to my therapist, I was saying, you know, you tried to break the chain of your dad's dad walking out, your dad walking out. Now you're consumed with making sure you break that chain and you're there and present for your kids, and sometimes that costs you opportunities at work even because you want to be there. Mm-hmm. I was not aware of what I lug around, which is... I make sure these kids are as perfect as I can make them. And even if I did 3 games that week or 4 games that week, I get up with them. I make sure their breakfast is done. I'm engaged with them. And I feel guilty when I leave them. Yeah. And it's almost debilitating where I don't ever stay in the present. If I'm out like doing something for me, I'm thinking about how bad I am because I'm not there with them.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
and I hate that, and I think a lot of it is because I grew up on the other end of that. Like, hey, you know, remember me? Or I got to be quiet.
Would you have that with your girls too?
Totally. Yeah,
you did.
I did. I mean, this is how I am. This is what I became as an adult.
So basically, you're sort of doing what I was doing, but unconsciously, meaning like. Only now you're having this revelation that, wow, maybe this is the reason I am this way.
Completely. By seeing this video and watching my dad basically laugh at what I try to do every day.
Yeah.
I was like, I watched, I was like, well, you could be that way. It might not be that bad for the kids if you... You know,
it was a different era, though, too. Wasn't that like the Mad Men era? Isn't that like when that was all going down?
Well, that's when he became a father for the first time.
Mad Men was the 60s, or?
Yeah, so I was born in 69. But he was a father of 6 prior to me showing up unexpectedly.
Right.
But it was still his world. You know, it was my mom making sure that everything, you know, she was an actress. She was on Broadway. She was talented and is talented and chucked all that to be Jack Buck's wife and make sure everything was set so that he, as an older dad, could go be the best in public that he could be. But when he came back, like I had a best friend in high school, Preston Clark, who came with us to spring training. And that's when Walkmen were coming out. And he's walking around our place screaming out the words to Roxanne, listening to his Walkman. I'm like, dude, shh, quiet. My dad's resting. And he didn't even get it. I'm like, you can be loud in your crazy household, but here, if my dad's laying on that couch, it's like we're not here. And it just, I don't know. It's many pieces of a longer therapy session, but the bottom line is I realize that I'm wired differently, probably because of what I saw, as you are wired differently as a dad because of what you experienced. I'm the same way, just a little different offshoot of it.
Yeah, that's crazy.
If you're enjoying this episode of Daddy Issues, don't keep it to yourself. Please share the love and tell a friend about Daddy Issues and go subscribe on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. We beg
you. That's right. Stay tuned. You don't want to miss what's coming up right after the break. Would your dad get upset if you like woke him up on the couch being loud?
He would just kind of... He'd look out of the corner of his eye. Like, the only time... He never yelled at me. I mean, you know, he disciplined me if I was bad with my sister when they went out to dinner or something. But as far as around him, I really watched my ass. And I wasn't a little, you know, jerky kid. I had mm-hmm. to sit there and be quiet if I wanted to watch him do what we're doing now, do an interview. I had to sit over in the corner and be quiet. And so all he would do would just kind of open his eyes, glare at me, and I was like, oh, shit. And mm-hmm. then I shut up. It wasn't like I was I'd never tested his boundaries were set. I wasn't like the kid poking at him, like, come on, Dad, what are you sleeping? What are you sleeping, you know, knocking him around or whatever. I didn't do that. So, yeah. And it was the same look I would get when we were in the booth together and I'm doing a game at 21 years old. And I'm like, if I got on the umpire, like, oh, and that pitch, where was that? That looked like a strike. And he'd look at me out of the corner of his eye, like, reel it back in there, Buck. And then I would, and then I'd reel it back in. So it was very revealing. I almost want to send you just to watch the last 8 minutes of my dad, like, and he was so funny. I mean, he was the light, but everybody's eyes were always on him when we were in any group setting. Like, I'm sure in your life as a kid, everybody's eyes in the room were on your mom. And I'm sure that drove your dad crazy too, because your dad was a talented, you know, successful performer, and yet shit, it's Goldie Hawn walking in the room, and there's you, there's Kate, there's your dad, and everybody's like, whoop, everybody's mm-hmm. looking at your mom. That's hard. That's hard to live in the shadow of, I think.
Oh, God. I think that was a huge issue with them. You know what I mean? I think that was big. Mom was a movie star, you know, and it was not an easy pill to swallow. It was not an easy thing to feel, you know.
What about you as a kid?
I mean, I had an issue with it. I mean, just because there were so many people wanting a piece of her when I needed her the most, I guess. And it always bugged me, you know, fans or when the people would come up to her, when we were eating dinner and shit, it would make me crazy. I just remember this like feeling of anger, you know what I mean? Almost unwarranted. Yeah. I mean, not unwarranted, but just irrational at times. Even people who are nice, you know, but just coming up at dinner or wanting this or wanting that. And I'm just been like, fuck. I remember as a young kid just feeling just this anger, you know. It was not a happy thing.
How are you now as an adult who's recognizable?
Yeah,
if somebody comes
different.
Up to... Are you appreciative, or does it bother you if you're out at dinner with Aaron and the kids and somebody goes,
no.
Oh my God, I love you.
No, I love it. And I love when people talk about my mom too. I mean, I get a lot of people who say like, oh my God, I love your mom and she's this and she's that. And you know, I have a lot of pride in that now.
I do too, but there's another, I do too for your mom.
And I don't mind people coming up to me ever. You know,
I've only had
a few instances where I've gotten upset. You know, one was at a golf tournament, and it was at like one of the benefit parts of it, or that at night when you're having the dinner and the concert or whatever, you know. And this dude was just drunk. And he's like, hey, man, like, I had to love this. And I was like, hey, thanks, brother. And then he was like, just kept on me and on me. And finally, I'm like, hey, bud, look, I'm going to go. Like, I can't, I got it. I got to go. And he grabbed my arm and I fucking went nuts. I lost it. I grabbed him by his like shirt and got right up in his face. Like Kurt, you know, I become Kurt. When I get angry, I feel like I become him, you know? And I just got right into his grill and I'm like, don't you ever fucking touch me. And I just went off on him.
So that
was
happens,
like one of the only times.
That happens to me in bars, and People they'll be drunk and they come up, they're like, hey, how about, you know, tell me about the Cowboys. Like, oh my God. Do you know how much I don't want to talk about this right now? Or I'm with Michelle and another couple, or I'm with my kids and the guy just won't. And it's like, you know, they're playing great. You know, they, you know, they got a big one this weekend. It's like, that's the cue to, hey, we're done. I got it. I acknowledged you.
Yeah.
We're done. And then it's like, then it comes back around. Hey, so tell me about what it was like with, I'm like, and I'll answer two or three. And then it's just like, hey, that's it. That's all I got. Yeah. You're going to have to go. And I'm so bad. If I grabbed him, I'd feel like I'd be sued. But I just want to go, hey, just get the fuck out of my face. Just I don't owe you this right now.
I think sometimes people don't understand the boundaries. It's like they see you on TV and they hear your voice. And so they know you. They think they know you. And there's this sort of unconscious thing that allows them in their own minds to come up to you because like, oh, he's a household guy. Like I know him, like I can talk to him, you know? Right.
Yeah.
That's sort of, I think what happens.
Well, that it happened the last time I can think of, some guy came up to me and he was doing that very thing. And he's like, let me take a picture with you. I just told my friend that you were here at this bar and I'm with Michelle and this other couple. I'm like, I really don't want to take a picture inside the bar. And the guys, you know, this is in the height of COVID too. I'm like, I just don't even want to be, don't breathe on me. Like, I don't know what you got. And he's like, oh, I just told my friend you were here. And he shows me his phone and I can see his friend's like, you fucking hate that guy. That was the text above him telling me. I'm like, I said, I saw what you said to your friend. I said, we're good. Mm. And he goes, no, man, no, let's take a picture. I said, we're good. I'm not taking a picture. I just told you we're not taking a picture.
Yeah.
Oh, come on, man. What are you, some kind of asshole? I'm like, I'm the asshole?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm the asshole. Fine. I'll be the asshole, but we're not taking a picture and just shut up.
Yeah.
And I, you know, on some level, I'm sure people are like, oh, poor babies. But there has to be some sort of personal space that,
of course, yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm not there as a fucking pinata. Like,
yeah, I know what you're saying with the poor baby thing, meaning like, oh, you make millions of dollars and you're famous, like, deal with it. Which, you know, I get that, right? We put ourselves out there, you especially, and you know, you're in a very sort of volatile job where people are rabid fans of their teams and they're irrational, and it's like, oh, we'll just deal with it. You know, yeah, you know the price that you have to pay, but it doesn't mean that it's a fucking free for all.
Well, and everyone's courtesy allowed to come up. Like goes out of the window.
Right. You know, exactly. Exactly. So, but at the same time, you wouldn't trade it, you know, you wouldn't trade it.
No.
So.
Yeah, no, I accept it, but there are just times. And I feel like, you know, I was the same way. My dad would, people come up to us at dinner and be like, where are you from? Sit down. Oh, Paducah. Yeah. I knew a guy named Ken Clark there. You know Ken Clark? Like, oh, Jesus Christ. You've been gone for 2 weeks. Can we just like get one dinner with you?
Yeah.
And, you know, why we had to come to this Italian restaurant, I'm not so sure. We have a kitchen, but okay. We're here. Well,
Your dad probably loved it. Yeah.
Loved it. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it was kind of absurd, but it's funny to me. And I was thinking about this again today, like the detail with which my sister can remember all that stuff and how she felt and her worries about our mom and dad and whatever. It's like either I need an MRI or I've repressed or blocked out some of these things, because she will remind me of details, and I'm just wondering about, like, do you remember these crazy details about interactions and times when you were 8, 9, 10, 11 years old?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I've of course thought about it, but I remember the sort of the traumatic stuff. You know what I mean? That's the stuff that sort of sticks in my brain. there's the traumatic, and then there's also like the sensational. It's the big moments that I remember, both good and bad. You know, I remember feeling lonely. I remember being in the dark. But I also remember, you know, being on my dad's boat and you know, being at Catalina and halibut fishing. I remember, you know, at 9 years old, sort of walking down a ravine with Kurt with a .22 rifle and feeling that fear and exhilaration. You know, so I remember all the big impactful things. The mundane, I do not. I have no recollection of the mundane, you know.
Okay, I talk about this with Michelle all the time because she's 3 years older than her brother. And with regard to her parents' divorce, she felt like the protector of her little brother. Mm-hmm. And so she took on a lot of that stuff and I think has repressed a lot of the really tough times and memories, and her brother remembers everything, but he remembers the good, and she remembers really only the bad when her parent, because she was trying to protect Andy and keep him covered. Mm-hmm. And you're older than Kate. Like, did you feel that you were protecting her? Were you not even in that role at all?
No, not at all. I think that I was too far gone myself. I was in self-protection mode unconsciously, that I didn't even have, I was worrying too much about my own preservation. I couldn't give anything to her, you know, and I think that's why the beginning of our relationship was no good. She needed love from me. She wanted love from me. I was the only thing constant, really, you know what I mean? And I just wasn't there. I didn't have the capacity. I couldn't do it. So I was just all about me, really. You know, I did not protect her. No way. Not even close. You know, and then as we got older, she's tough, man. Kate can handle herself. She's definitely fragile in spots. There's no doubt about that. And I'm there for her always. And I've been there with her and for her for some really, you know, gnarly moments. And I've been her big brother. But on the day-to-day, you know, with like dudes and dating, I was never protective. And, you know, she was always so tough and strong. Like, she could do it on her own, you know?
Yeah.
At least that's what I perceived.
Yeah, and she puts up that front for sure.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be back after this short break with more Daddy Issues. You know what? I realized something too. A while back, maybe it was during Hoffman. No, maybe it was after. I don't know. But you know, you go through your life, or I go through my life, having a dad who wasn't there for the most part. There was great years though, up until I was about 12 years old, and then everything else was sort of what I didn't get. Not him being mean, not him yelling and screaming and being abusive in any way. It was just his absence. And then the things that I heard, you know, from mom, and also maybe that was on the news or on Inside Edition or whatever. But when I really think back on the memories of my father, I'm hard pressed to find one that's bad, because every time I was with him was fucking awesome. And he was extremely attentive. He would not have us and then just retreat to his office or something. I would play football with him on the beach. We would, you know, go fishing. It was active. He was truly in my life. And I remember him. My memories of him is all positive, really fun, loving things. Going to Palm Springs at the time and playing golf and riding on golf carts. And you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was really an interesting revelation for me, because it was always this, oh, it's bad, 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 abandoned, never there. But then it's like, okay, well, let me think about my memories. And there's not one that's fucking bad.
Except, you know, that he was gone at one point.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, but that's what I mean.
But when he was there, absence. He was there.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. When we were there with him, he was bang on. You know, we were doing all kinds of activities and things and Disneyland and having fun. Swimming in the pool, his pool. I have vivid memories of his pool. And, you know, So it was powerful. They're powerfully positive memories of my dad. Not a lot of negative memories, just the absence, you know?
Man, maybe you had a better childhood than I did, now that I think about it.
No.
I don't know. They're incomparable.
Good, man.
You can't compare.
Yeah.
It is what it is. It was what it was. And I think it presents you then to the world as this collection of experiences, both positive and negative, that come out when you become an adult yourself. And it's like, well, how are you going to do it? Are you going to...
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was hard on my first wife, you know, because I got into my first marriage thinking, okay, I'm in this to be adored. I'm in this to be for the king treatment because I'm bringing home the bacon, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And that's what I saw as a kid. And now we're going to have kids. And so, wait, I'm going to have to, I'm changing diapers. This is 50-50 here. And I'm thankful that it was that way. As I look back, I wouldn't have wanted it to be any other way with regard to how I interacted with my kids. But I think I went in thinking my own experience was it was all my mom and her mom, and my dad was there for the moments, but not down and dirty. You know, like mm-hmm. we weren't fishing, we didn't go shooting, we didn't.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't, you know, he didn't teach me how to swim. He didn't, mm-hmm. if I played catch, I was deathly afraid of overthrowing him. So he had to go fucking chase the ball down on the beach. And there are just so many things that I'm like, we were really close, but I was also a little nervous to make a mistake around him. Not because I was going to get hit, but because I was going to disappoint or he wouldn't want me around anymore. So I tried to be as perfect as I could be.
That's so interesting. It's almost like you had such little time with him that you wanted to make sure it was not interrupted by anything negative.
That's
by throwing
so true.
A ball over his head. Even though he might not have been mad or hasn't given you examples of being a mad when you do something wrong, but it's almost like I have so little time with this man that I want to make everything good.
I want to make it all perfect. He had me at 40, he was 45, so by the time I'm 10, he's 55. By the time I'm 15, he's 60. It's almost like my boys. But he was traveling 2 weeks at a time, and there was no internet, and there was no FaceTime, and the only time he called was from the broadcast booth because it was a free phone line. And mm-hmm. if I was home, I was home, and I talked to him. And if I wasn't, and I was out playing or whatever I was doing, I didn't talk to him. So it's like, am I going to waste the time that he's here by something as simple as throwing the ball over his head and ruining those 3 minutes because I've got him for 15? Or am I gonna be, you know, the kid that got caught being out too late or busted with alcohol and now I'm grounded and I don't get to go down to the park with my dad, go down to the baseball game with my dad? I'm not gonna ruin that. It was too precious.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. That's crazy. And it's also, for me, it's just recognizing the good things, because we talked about earlier with your revelation in therapy in this video of how, you know, you might have unconsciously being exactly what your father's not on purpose, unconsciously on purpose, you know, being boom. And I was that way too. But at the same time, now I got to think about it, because there's also so many great things about that man. You know, there are things that I would want to emulate as well. And that's when he was with us, because he was extremely attentive. I mean, sometimes I feel like I'm selfish and don't do enough with my kids and don't take them out and play with them enough, because I can just want to sit in my room or just be selfish and I'm going to do what I want to do. You know, so there are things to actually look at and take to emulate, and not just rail against all the time. And that's the one great thing about my mom. Not one, fucking many, but she's just so evolved and was evolved and is evolved and just an incredible human being. And she pulled me aside when I was 16 years old. And actually, she wrote me a letter, and I just read it recently. She talked to me and then wrote me a letter. And she's like, basically saying your dad is all of these things, and we've seen that he is who he is, and it's always seems to be negative, but I want to write you a letter and talk to you about all of the amazing things that your dad is and why I fell in love with him and how much of part of you are of him and all the incredible things. You know, she made me aware of that and made me understand that it wasn't all bad, you know,
yeah,
which I think is important in divorce, you know, it's absolutely an important thing.
Yeah. I think most of the time is typically spent tearing down the parent that's not there.
Yeah. Hey, Juggernaut with Josh. Juggernaut with Josh.
All right, what's up?
Josh, when was the last time you made love?
Same answer as last time. Yeah, which is, it's been a minute.
All right.
That's Juggernaut.
I thought my Juggernaut with Josh was, do you believe in heaven or hell?
We're just going to ask the same question every time, Juggernaut with Josh.
I think you need this. This should put an impetus behind your nighttime activity to make sure that your answer can be different next time we convene on this Zoom call. We need Margo to find a boyfriend. I re-listened to that. I haven't been dating with anybody in 4 years, and now we got Josh who's having medication issues, and
between the two of you guys, like, our entire production team is celibate pretty much.
Hey, I never said I was celibate. I said I'm not going on actual dates. Thank you very much.
Oh my god,
you talk about Pandora's box with Oliver on this Zoom call, and you just throw that out there. Margo, you're smarter than that.
I won't dig. So wait, Josh, how do you know that you're having ejaculatory issues?
Oh my God.
I got to go raise my kids now. I don't care about Josh's ejaculatory issues. I care more about his bird than his bird.
I'm just saying... You know, it's just, you can't get there. Is this what we're talking about?
Right. Yes.
Even manually, even self-inflicted.
That's what I mean. It's like, it's impossible. It's not impossible, but it's like.
You know what I think would take the pressure off, Josh, is if you just had, do you have like a little speaker?
A little
by your
speaker.
Bed, a speaker,
Bluetooth, yeah.
Like yeah. A Bluetooth speaker. Just play the Jeopardy theme song while you're having sex. I think that'll just alleviate all issues. Have you ever tried a 1-900 number, Josh?
Full circle, Josh. Call a 1-900 number.
There you go.
Josh, you can call my 1-900 number because I'm going to start one.
Yeah.
Hey, Josh. Yeah, I don't think those exist anymore. I mean, maybe, Josh. This is your homework for the next episode next week, is call a 1-900 number and let us know if you get there.
All right. I'll have to look it up.
But here's the thing. I mean, I think in this day and age of the internet, these 900 numbers have to be at such discounted rates. I mean, they're basically paying you to call them.
I know. It's true.
Right? It's like there's 3 1-900 operators still in business.
What if we did a Daddy Issues promotion where we create a 1-900 number and you and I are the operators on the other end?
I think nothing bad could come of that.
I fully support this idea. I like this idea a lot.
Yeah, of course you do. You've got nothing to lose.
Yeah.
That'd be great. Josh is on the interweb right now looking up 900 numbers. Look at him. His little finger's working.
I don't know. I still don't have a good answer, though.
They can't exist.
You're going to need to like make sure you tell Vanessa why you're looking up 900 numbers on your computer.
Well, I think their website, they got to be like, if you watch late night TV, local TV, they still have those ads, but they're not promoting
a 900
number.
Well, that was like 100 years ago.
No, yeah, but they're not promoting a 900 number. They're promoting
like
a website, a webcam, yeah. or a dating app. See,
that's replaced it. It's like you pay instead of $3.99 a minute for talking to some sort of weirdo on the other end of the line with six guys on the phone as well. Now you can do cam. It's like a cam situation where it's like you pay whatever a minute and you're actually watching a girl.
But there's no camera on you. Like, you don't have to do a makeover or anything.
I don't know.
No, it's the girls have a camera. They're called cam girls. I've never done it. Oh,
what should I wear? like a tuxedo? Something like James Bond?
No, you're not on camera. That would be horrible.
That would be horrible.
Yeah, I don't think those numbers exist anymore. I'm looking. Damn it. I don't see. Yeah.
Well, guys, we could start maybe one. We could make our own. We could bring it back.
I don't think that's going to really do much for anybody.
Do you think if I started like a cam, I was like a cam guy or doing a cam service, that I could make good money?
I do.
I don't. I don't think your target audience, unless you just sat there all day. Oh, and by the way, my friend Lee, who we interviewed on this podcast one time and lives in the Middle East, mm-hmm. sent you an email.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, which you don't even aren't aware of, to this stupid email thing that you got.
I read some last night.
And all you sent back were like emojis.
Yeah, because there's 600,000 of them. I can't like
well,
give
that
a
just
full
means,
hearted.
That just means you know, that's like a bullshit you know, laugh face, heart.
No, heart. It's just heart.
Yeah,
that means
I acted like I read it. I have no idea what this is.
It was actually
what we could do with Juggernaut, with Josh or whatever you call it.
Oh, yes.
That was Lee from Dubai.
I remember that one.
Yeah.
Like, Juggernaut, oh, Josh. all right.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Caca! Caca!
Listen to Daddy Issues on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Daddy Issues is a production of Cavalry Audio and iHeartMedia, produced by Margot Carmichael.
Sound engineering and editing by Josh Windisch.
Executive produced by Joe Bach, Oliver Hudson, Dana Brunetti, and Keegan Rosenberger.